It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret. Between 2016 and 2023, more than 9,000 Wisconsinites died from opioid overdoses. One major contributor to those fatalities has been people who overdose after being released from jail or prison. For people who have been incarcerated for a long time without access to opioids or medications to prevent withdrawal, their tolerance to opioids can be lower, putting them at a greater risk of overdose. Researchers have found that providing medications for opioid use disorder to people who are incarcerated lowers that risk of experiencing an overdose after release. A new report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum looks at the availability of these medications in Wisconsin jails and prisons. It's called Treatment Behind Bars. Andy Tisdell is a researcher with the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Andy, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And Jason Stein is president of the Policy Forum. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Ron.
Jason, before we dig into the details of the report, can you tell us a little bit about the stakes? This is something I think I haven't thought about much. A lot of people haven't. How much of a difference can it make if there's access to these kind of treatments in our jails and prisons?
Well, thanks. That's a good place to start. And that's what got us involved in the project, which was supported with a grant from the group Vital Strategies. There are between 500 and 600 people a year who die in opioids overdoses in Wisconsin each year. Now, though that's down significantly from the peak in 2022, it's still on the order of the number of people dying from traffic fatalities each year. So it's a very serious public health problem. And a big contributor is individuals who are held in prison or a county jail, and they've been using opioids. They stop while they're incarcerated, and then when they're released, they start using again, and they're at elevated risk of overdose. And so that's a big contributor to the overall number of deaths in the state.
And Andy, what kind of medications and treatments are you looking at, are you measuring here in Wisconsin's jail and prison system in this report?
So there's three different medications that we focused on, methadone, buprenorphine, and naltrexone. Methadone and buprenorphine are known as agonist medications, which means that they activate the same receptors in the brain that are activated by opioids. And so when you're on this, it's like a sort of safer, more controlled version of being on opioids that avoids the symptoms of withdrawal or mitigates them and allows people to gradually step down their use of the medication. Naltrexone blocks those receptors in the brain entirely, but it doesn't provide that same relief from withdrawal.
And Andy, when you looked, what is the availability of those treatments look like in Wisconsin's prisons and jails?
Well, all 36 Department of Corrections facilities will now continue the buprenorphine prescription. That is, if you come into prison with a buprenorphine prescription, they will continue providing that medication. Naltrexone is also available in 20 prisons for people leaving jail or for people leaving the facility. And methadone is available, although we weren't able to determine how often. Jails, we saw a pretty big increase in the number of jails that had access to all three of those medications, both any individual medication and multiple medications. In particular, buprenorphine went from, I believe, 8 jails that had it in 2021 to 47 jails.
Jason, are you seeing a policy priority happening here that's leading to that increase in the availability to, as Andy just mentioned, more jails around the state?
Yes, I think so. And one other thing we can say about these types of medications, so buprenorphine and methadone have been found in studies to be associated with a decrease in overdose deaths among those using them, as well as a decrease in certain other, you know, important indicators like recidivism. When we talk about what might have been driving this policy change, both the state and local level, there's several things. I think one is just the severity of the opioid crisis itself and the number of overdose deaths and other associated problems with this crisis. And then as well, we see the U.S. Department of Justice has issued guidance that this is providing these medications is required under the Americans with Disabilities Act, so that, you know, the State Department of Corrections officials specifically cited that guidance as a reason why they had stepped up their efforts. And then, you know, in addition, There's opioid settlements that happen with pharmaceutical makers of those drugs. Those funds, I think, are providing, an additional tool to make this access possible. And then finally, I think as just more institutions, more county jails, more state prisons offer it, it just becomes more visible within the criminal justice system. And there's more resources and availability. If a county sheriff wants to learn how to do this, he can turn to, in every case in the state now, a neighboring county where it's already being done.
We're talking to Jason Stein and Andy Tuzel from the Wisconsin Policy Forum about their new report. It's called Treatment Behind Bars, Medication for Opioid Use Disorder in Wisconsin's Jails and Prisons. In the report, Andy, you mentioned some jails might have some obstacles putting these things into practice. What are some of the barriers? What are some of the things that might limit a jail in particular's ability to provide these treatments?
Well, when we asked what factors were a barrier, the biggest response was cost. So these medications are sometimes supported by opioid settlement funding, as Jason mentioned, but they do still cost money. Staffing is also an issue. Having the appropriate staffing in the jail to deliver these medications in a safe and controlled manner. Other problems, having the people who may not know about these medications or what they do. There sometimes can be an education question. So that's been a little bit of a factor limiting the number of people receiving medications in any given jail.
Jason, I want to key in on that staffing issue. We've heard concerns at Wisconsin's prisons in recent years that, hey, they didn't have enough staff for basic inmate safety and staff safety in some cases. And I can imagine a smaller county jail, well, they might not need a lot of staff, but what they have might be stretched thin if they take on extra duties like providing medication. How important is that staffing issue when it comes to providing these treatments?
I think it's important. I think, you do need to have licensed personnel to do this, to dispense these medications. So that's an important factor. And there have been increases that both state prisons, county jails have had to make in the hourly wages to their staff to be able to retain them, because they did have those big staffing challenges. And so that is just budget pressure within the system. And again, there are gaps, although, one of the big themes of the report is this increase in access. There remain gaps. So right now, both counties and state facilities, it's much more common for them to continue an existing prescription than to initiate an individual on a new course of medication with a new prescription. And so if you look at the counties around the state, eight of them told us that they do not provide access to the medications at all. About a half dozen counties didn't answer our survey. And then of those that did answer, about a third of the counties said that they don't initiate individuals on medication. So, all there's been a lot of movement, there's, still gaps in access.
Andy, I know this might be hard to measure, right? It's hard to have a statistic on overdoses that don't happen. But is there a sense that, hey, these improvements, this increased access in many jails and prisons has led to fewer overdose incidents for people after they're released?
Unfortunately, our data don't allow us to determine that. We only know the number of people who received these medications, not the number of people with opioid use disorder in any given facility. However, given the sheer magnitude of these changes and the number of facilities that are providing these medications that didn't before, it's very reasonable to think that these practices have improved health and potentially saved lives across the state.
Jason, the report shows, again, a lot of progress, it sounds like, but you've mentioned a couple gaps there. Do you see some low-hanging fruit where maybe a modest investment can close some of these gaps you find in this report?
I think one of the tools that's out there for both the state and for counties are these opioid settlement dollars. And you do have, as I mentioned before, there's a map in our report that shows sort of access by county jail. And you can see that, in any particular county, even if it's not currently offered, there are options around that county where the jails are offering the medication. And so, I think one of the things that could be looked at is whether jails could partner with one another. There's also private healthcare institutions and groups that do also provide this service. And so, if even a small jail, and they are typically small jails that are not doing this currently, if they did want to look at it, they'd have both funding from the settlement, potentially, depending on what their county board decided to do, as well as some more experienced groups that are already working in this area that they could partner with.
Andy, having done this research, what questions does this open up for you now? What do you wish you had when it came to data, or what would you want to see from future studies, whether from the Policy Forum or elsewhere?
I think it's just back to the last question, where we don't know the number of individuals with opioid use disorder in any given institution and how that compares to the people receiving medication. If we had the time and the ability to find that out, that would be my preference for the next study. I would like to know what portion of the demand for medications is currently being met, and what implications that has for policymakers.
And Jason, that's a great place to bring it to for the end here. You don't write reports just for the heck of it. What are you hoping that those policymakers take this data you've collected and then do with it?
Well, I know you know this, Rob, and maybe many of your listeners, that we don't advocate one way or the other. But since we are talking about something that's a life or death matter, we hope that county officials and state officials will look at this data and look what's happening in other parts of their region and make sure that they feel like they're policies that they have are in line with the law and what the voters in their area want to see happen, and ultimately are getting the best possible outcomes for everyone that lives in Wisconsin.
We'll leave it there. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Andy, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
That's Andy Tisdell and Jason Stein. They're both with Wisconsin Policy Forum. Been talking about their new report looking at the availability of medications for opioid use disorder in Wisconsin jails and prisons. If this is an issue that's affected your life or that of a loved one, please share your story. You can email wisconsintoday@wpr.org.